Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want to I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now talk radio show sponsored by NASCA. Stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Penelope Bennis, and I am from Bellevue, Washington, and I'm here with Mrs. Pamela Elaine Lockridge. She is from Louisiana. She is on my host team this evening. We welcome you to the show. Tonight is May 17th, 2021, scan number 2661, and tonight is special guest night, and we have a very special guest here with us this evening. Her name is Claire O'Leary. She's from Newcastle, Colorado. And before Pamela and I let you know a little bit more about our special guest, Claire, I want to talk to you about NASCA and its mission. So NASCA is all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. Before I repeat the mission statement, I would invite you to call in and join our panel. The number to do so is area code 646-595-2118. Again, that's area code 646-595-2118. Pamela will welcome you in on the back line, and no experience necessary, but it is an opportunity to support our special guest and ask for a question or a comment during the show. We have a single purpose at NASCA. It's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with two goals. The first, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, such as this show, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So one more time, if you would like to call in and be a member of our panel, the number is area code 646-595-2118. Before we begin, I just wanted to explain, Pamela and I structured the show. All of our shows are structured on NASCA in the following manner. For special guest night, we break the show to three segments, and it's an opportunity for our special guests to come on and tell their story in their own words. But in the segments, we'd like to start the first segment off in the first part of the guest's life, the earliest memories from the time of birth up until about the age of 16 or 18. We then break to the panel, and our panel has an opportunity to ask a question or offer a comment based upon our special guests and their story. The second segment of the show is in the middle years from about 18 to 35. We then break again to the panel. We like to try and break to the panel twice. And then the last segment of the show is about the healing journey and what's going on now currently and the work of the special guest. more in the present time. So that is how we like to structure the show, to give you a little bit of background. And before I bring on our very special guest, Claire O'Leary from Newcastle, Colorado, I wanted to tell you a little bit about what Claire provided us with in her bio. So Claire states that she was raised in a Catholic family by her natural parents. She was one of six in her family. There were three boys and three girls. She's right in the middle in terms of birth order. The first time she was abused, she was 5 years old by her uncle. The second time she was abused, she says was much more painful, with her father abusing her from the ages of 16 to 18. And she was finally able to leave home after graduating from high school. So I'm going to stop there. There's a lot more that Claire had provided us with in her bio, but we'll go through her bio as we go through the different segments. And without further ado, I'm going to unmute Claire's microphone. And Claire, on behalf of NASCA and Pamela and myself, we welcome you onto the show this evening. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, well, you're very, very welcome. And, at any time, anytime any of us come onto the show and offer to tell our story, it is, I believe, very, very brave and courageous offering, really. We give a little bit of ourselves to tell our story. So I just think it takes a tremendous amount of courage. And these radio shows, yes, they're 90 minutes. They go by very, very quickly, but we structure them in those three segments because they are recorded and archived, and we have many, many NASCA members or individuals, out in the world that are starting on or on their healing journey that actually come back to these shows and listen to them. So the scans that we can take a look at over time, the scans are, we can tell, they are listen to over and over. So the show tonight and you coming on telling your story, it's impacting those that are listening now, but it's going to really, it does make a difference to so many people. And it's a gift. I believe it's a gift. So in telling your story and giving that and having the archive there for listeners to go back and take advantage of and listen to. So I just first wanted to open up by saying thank you and acknowledging, the courage that it takes to come on and tell your story, and whether it's for the first time or for the 100th time, I believe we're always giving a little part of ourselves. So with that being said, Claire, I wanted to ask you a question in terms of, I know you've given us some information in your bio, but just really just maybe give us a little bit of some context and some background. From your earliest memory, can you tell us, where you were born, where you lived, what your family was like, what your earliest memories were like?
Well, actually, I was born in Quebec, Canada, in the Northwest Center, so my first language was French. And large family, large extended family, and I remember I probably remember winter more than anything else because we had so much snow, and I absolutely loved ice skating and sledding, and my whole family, we were really close, and we had a lot of fun, always, building forts, throwing snowballs at each other, lots of laughter, lots of singing. I can remember as I was growing up in the summer, I would go visit my aunt and uncle, actually I should say several aunts and uncles, and we would hang out on this huge swing, and all of us from the age of 3 to 16, we would just be swinging and singing. We sang all the time. We had a very singing type of family. As a matter of fact, my sisters and I were going to be the Robert sisters when we grew up, which, you know, obviously that didn't happen. But I still enjoy singing a lot.
So it sounds like you had a very happy, adjusted childhood from your earliest memories.
I really did. I did. And even the abuse at 5 was so short, and I really forgot about it for the longest time. It just was not, I knew it had happened, but, you know, it just wasn't on my radar until I was about 16.
So if you wouldn't mind, and of course, and I know that Pamela, you and Pamela had a discussion about this when you were talking about coming on the show. This is your show. Stay within your comfort zone. And if you're being triggered or something's too painful to talk about or you wish not to speak of it, that is absolutely your right. Your right to do so. But I have a question about the abuse. Would you mind explaining a little bit about what happened to you at 5 years old?
Absolutely. My uncle was visiting, and my parents stepped out for a very short period of time and said to me, "Don't go in the bedroom. You'll wake up Jeanette." Jeanette was my baby sister. She was probably 18 months old or less. And no sooner did they leave that my uncle takes me in the bedroom by the hand. And even though I said no, he just said, "We'll be quiet. It'll be fine." And of course, he proceeds to molest me. And we both hear the doorknob turning, and my uncle gets up in a rush and walks out the door and says, "Put your panties back on and come out." Mm-hmm. By the time I come out, my parents are sitting at the kitchen table, and I get in trouble because I went in the bedroom. And it took years for me to realize this, because it was something that seemed so small at the time and insignificant. But what happened is that at 5 years old, when I came out, and I am literally standing in the doorway, and tears are streaming down my face, and I am wondering, will they still love me? I was a bad girl. And, of course, I get in trouble, and I'm wondering, why is my uncle not saying something? Why is he not saying that he took me in there, that it was his fault, and that I obeyed him because that's what I was taught to do? Of course he's not going to do that. But at 5 years old, you don't realize that. So what I realized at 58, when I finally claimed that story, is that I had been a yes girl until I actually wrote down that story. And writing down that story, I felt a lifting of weight from my shoulders that honestly I didn't even know was there until that moment. It was just realized that I no longer needed to be the yes girl that I chose to be when I was 5. I could figure out who I was and learn who I was, what I wanted, and I had to learn boundaries, and I finally did. Finally learned how to say no, and how to say yes to myself and those things that I wanted. And it literally changed my life.
So I'm going to echo Pamela now. So everything that you're saying is so impactful, first of all. And they've given us so much. And I don't want to jump ahead too much because that part of your story is so important about, you know, looking backwards, right? Coming to terms with, you know, the reality of what happened at 5, even at 58. I just wanted to put that place, keep that thought, and we're going to work with that also in the third segment. But there's a couple of things that you said that struck me that I just wanted to go back and allude to before I invite Pamela into the conversation as well. And here's the first thing is this: at 5 years old, there's three things that struck me. Let me see if I can remember them by the time I get to the third one. But the first is, you walk out of the bedroom. You weren't supposed to be there. Your parents are home. I mean, they unfortunately didn't come home early enough to interrupt what, you know, the inception of what was going to happen. They came home after it had happened. You're walking out of the bedroom. You have tears streaming down your face. You have been, you know, violated in the worst way that a child possibly can be. And I'm not only talking about physically, I'm talking about emotionally as well. Your innocence has been stolen from you. It's been ripped away. You're crying. And then your parents see you in a place where you're not supposed to be, even though the uncle's present, and you are reprimanded for that. So you say that the first thought you had was, I hope they would, before your parents, right, had reprimanded you, you already had taken all the blame on yourself.
Yes.
I hope that those still love me. And then to reaffirm that it was your, really, where the, that your self-blame was reaffirmed by your parents' reaction to you being in the bedroom. And that shame and self-blame was carried with you.
It was.
And that's what I heard. And the thing is this, it happened at 5. You said you'd never really given it a second thought, but you know, we don't give these things a second thought because what that, for me, what I've heard from the story is, you know, that initial, you know, what impacts our thought process initially is what stays with us until it's confronted later. It's what we know. It's what we live with. It's what our, you know, that's our adjusted reaction to what happened. And that becomes ingrained in us until we confront it, if we have the opportunity to later on in the healing process. But just the self-blame and the reaffirmation of the self-blame struck me. And the second thing about your story that struck me was, obviously your uncle, you know, as a perpetrator, it went very well for him, didn't it?
It certainly did.
Right, right. And the third thing is that, you know, now we know, you know, we're parents. This is why it's so important to tell our stories, the awareness, to talk about it, to get out in the open, to make talking about child sexual abuse and the prevalence of it and the incidents. It's so important because we know now as parents, of course, we're survivors. When a child comes out of a bedroom where they're not supposed to be with tears streaming down their face, when they've been under the care of an older person, we need to absolutely address that right away. That is a big fat red flag. And, you know, unfortunately, that is not the reaction that your parents had. I'm sure that they, you know, did what they knew. But unfortunately, you know, we as adults, we are all responsible in the prevention and intervention of child abuse and child sexual abuse. So these are signs, and you, by you sharing that, right, these are signs that we all need to look out for in children in these types of situations. These things should never, ever be ignored. And I think denial plays a big role in that, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So would you mind if I invite Pamela into the conversation and we start going down the panel?
Sure.
Okay.
That would be fine.
So, Pamela.
Hello, Claire. Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely.
Right, because we have people streaming in by computer. Then we have panelists. We've got about three, one's listening only, and then we've got two more besides me that will be interacting with you. My comment or question is, this uncle, did he abuse you one time, or was he able to get at you multiple times?
No, he did. He only abused me once, but he did abuse his son as well, and my sister, my younger sister, as she got older.
Was he your dad's brother or your mother's brother?
He was my dad's brother.
Okay. And do you think it was the times, and that's the reason they didn't think that you had been abused by this man? And had they set boundaries for you not to go into his room before they left? Or how did that work?
Well, there were probably a couple of factors in suggesting that I not go in the bedroom. And the first one is that one thing one never wanted to do in my home is to wake up my 18-month-old sister, because she was a screamer, and we did not, once she was asleep, we wanted her to stay there. But I think there was a possibility they may have known that was a possibility. And they may have reacted from fear, you know, because it was one of those, we told you not to go in there. And I suspect that they may have realized that was a possibility, but they never talked to me about it.
Did they punish you physically, or was it just a verbal?
It was just strictly a verbal, yeah.
Okay. Well, how did you react, like, when you were 6, 7, 8? Did that stay with you during those years, and your mind would think about that? You know, like, my abuse, it happened, it was ritualistic. So that's the reason I'm asking you. I wouldn't know if one time it happened, you know, at a lower age, if I would think of it when I was, you know, growing up. So when you were 6 and 7 and 8, did you have flashbacks from it? Did you have nightmares? Did you have fear?
I did not. Not that I recall.
Okay.
I just remember making the decision that in order to be loved, I had to be anything anybody wanted me to be and do anything anyone wanted me to do. And I became that good little girl, because that's what my parents wanted. And I just was the yes girl all my life because of it.
Sounds like you were a pretty wise 5-year-old. That's what I had to say about that. Yeah. Wise at 5. I'm going to let Penelope go on down the panel. We have a lady that's from PA that wants to listen only. So.
Yeah. So, and before we go down, I just wanted to make a comment, Claire, if that's okay. And this is not this is not a a reprimand. This is an observation, and this is actually an article that I read when I was first starting my healing process, and it was written by, I believe her name was Dr. Dorothy Niedermeyer, a PhD psychotherapist on incest and sexual abuse. And I will never forget what she said. It was a great article. It was all about just when you realize really vulnerable in the first times, you know, you bring a repressed memory forward, or a memory, something that you've never been able to speak about. And she just said, I'll never forget this, whether your abuse happened once or multiple times, it doesn't matter. The damage is immediate. The damage done is immediate. And I only could remember initially the first one incidence of sexual abuse initially. And I was dismissive of it. I minimized it. And then I read her article and I realized that, well, even if it only happened to me one time, the damage was profound and it was immediate. Now, for me, that allowed me, I actually was able to bring up and remember more instances of the sexual abuse. But this is not a reprimand, but for those that are listening in that think, well, you know, it happened to me one time and, you know, maybe it wasn't that big of a deal.
I totally agree with that. I had no idea how important that 15 minutes was.
Yes, exactly. Right. Right. Exactly. Thank you. And I know that you're probably getting to that as you go down the story, but we're on the same page with that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we find our voice and we speak of it, the minimization didn't serve us well, right? We need to actually get it out and bring it out.
Exactly.
I'm going to bring on Mary Ellen from New York. Mary Ellen is one of our NASCA family members. Mary Ellen, welcome this evening. You are on with Claire.
Hi, Claire. Nice to meet you. Thank you for the invite.
Thank you for being here as well.
Yes. I'm sorry that your experience happened the way it did, and it's obvious that maybe you handled it then the best you could, but still years later it's a memory with emotional effects and pain. And I appreciate that you're here to share this with us, and we're here to support you. So thank you.
Thank you, Mary Ellen. I'll put you back on mute. We'll come back to the next round. So we have Tamika from Oregon who's joined us. And so, Tamika, good evening. You are on with Claire.
Hello, Claire. Can you hear me?
I can.
Awesome. Hey, thank you so much for being here and sharing your story. It's really appreciated, and it just shows that our voice do matter, and that, you know, things do happen in our life that have an effect on us. And it's that healing path, that journey that we're on that takes us back to those childhood events to try to understand, make sense, and to unravel a lot of that stuff that has occurred inward. And so thank you so much for being here sharing your story.
Thank you so much. If I can help one other person with my story, it's profound to be able to help even one person, and that is why I'm sharing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Tamika, and we'll come back to you in the next round. It's good to hear your voice and have someone else on the West Coast with me here. Same time zone. Tamika's in Oregon, so one state away. Okay, I'm putting you back on mute. And we do have another listener from Pennsylvania. She's in listen-only mode. And so we are now back, you know, believe it or not, Claire, as you know, these when we're live, I don't know, the time just starts flying by, and it's we're already over 30 minutes in, so we're already a third of the show has passed, and which is the part we're right on target, so we're in the second segment now, and so, you know, I did break a little bit early in your story. We were talking about, you know, your the incident with your uncle. And so moving forward in the story, just the second time you had mentioned in your bio was much more painful. Your father abusing you from 16 to 18. And it ended, it sounds like, when you were finally able to leave after graduating from high school. So do you mind just picking up your story and telling us a little bit about what happened when you were 16 to 18 and then leaving the home?
Sure. So the night before it happened, I had gone out with my boyfriend, and we had a really good time, and we had done some heavy petting before I got home. And the next morning, my father came in to wake me up. The kids were watching cartoons. I could hear the cartoons playing in the other room. And I was sort of reminiscing over the really wonderful time that I'd had the night before. And my father came in, and he says, "I smell sex." And he swore that I'd had sexual relations that night, which I had not. And he climbed into my bed, and he said, "I just want to know what turns you on," and touched my thigh, and I completely disappeared. I felt like I turned into a board, and I can recognize that today as dissociation, but at the time, I just remember not feeling anything and thinking, "Well, it's not you." And
wow.
And then I feel like I woke up, he was gone. And from then on, when it happened, I can just remember hearing the doorknob turn, and it was every Saturday morning. He said to me one day, "Well, you know, if you got up earlier, this wouldn't happen. So it's your fault." And of course, I took that in. I can just remember when he turned the doorknob, I would disappear before he ever came in. So I don't honestly know what happened any of the other times, but that first time with him was heartbreaking. Here I was, this good little Catholic girl, fighting not to have sex, and he comes in and insists that I did, and I know that there was no penetration. And I know that because it was years later when I finally did. But it made no difference. He may as well have. Because a father does not do that to his
child. That's right.
Just, it was just heartbreaking that he even considered doing that. So I was 18 and moving to Denver. By then we were living in New Mexico. And he and my mom were supposed to drive me to Denver. It's an 8-hour drive, so there was no reason to stop. But we stopped in Santa Fe, and we did a lot of looking around and, you know, and enjoying the history and going to the market and looking at the beads. And, you know, it was a really interesting thing. But then he took me to a sleazy hotel with vibrating beds. And there were two beds. And he kept trying to convince me to get into his, which I would not do. And then he finally got into mine. And I just remember him turning on this vibrating bed, and then I was gone. I remember nothing else.
So you were on a trip alone with your father. There were no other family members.
Exactly. And my mother had planned to come along, and then something came up. There was no one to take care of my younger siblings, so she ended up staying home. And I was angry for years about her giving him one more chance to do that.
Right. Do you think that your mother had any suspicion that this was going on at all? Were there any
well,
signs, not,
you know,
that she would get, you would get that she would be, there would be something there?
Well, I wondered that for years, and as strange as this sounds, she passed away when I was 18 actually. And conversations with her. And she recently, actually, I asked her that very question. And she said, I didn't know until the end. So I think she did not know until I came home from college. Mm-hmm. And when she was actually, it was a 6-month trade college for computer programming. And she was sick in bed and wanted me to stay home and take care of the kids. I had just graduated, but I had plans to go back to Denver and start a life. But since she was so sick, I agreed. Then as I was peeling carrots that night for our dinner, my father made some offhand remark, and I don't know what it was, and I just put the carrot down, walked into her bedroom, and I said, I'm sorry, I can't stay. I can't be with him one more.
Wow.
And she went in the hospital that night while I was gone, and she never came out. I think that may have been when she figured it out.
Mm-hmm. Not that we ever, there's never any excuse for abuse.
No.
We have to all own. We all own our actions, but, you know, there's, I'm probably taking, this is a question Pamela would ask as well, but it was your paternal uncle, your father's brother, that had sexually abused you, molested you at 5, then your father. So typically we see there's this generational cycle. Do you have any, or did you suspect that there was, this was a cyclical pattern in your father's family of origin?
I am pretty sure that it was a pattern. My father and my brother were sent to an orphanage when they were quite young after their mother passed away. When, because his father didn't feel like he could take care of them. So they were there for several years until he got remarried, and then they came back home. I am pretty sure that something happened there.
Mm-hmm. Were there
any proof.
Right. And, you know, this is why we break the silence, is to stop the pattern. And also there is, the more we tell our truth and speak the truth and bring it out, the more we can heal, but also the more answers we get to the patterns and to have some sort of an understanding. We had Lisa Zarconi as a special guest a few episodes back, and she did say something very profound, and that, you know, just knowing the reasons why, not that we ever condone standing, and it's more of a part of the healing journey, it was for her, and I definitely would agree with this, but just to, you know, if I, to understand the, you know, epidemiology, right, the facts behind the cycle, to get, you know, it does help to, for me, it's putting the, you know, it can be like putting a puzzle together. Not that we condone it. We've all made choices as survivors not to repeat the cycle. We know that we have that power of making those decisions. But just to be able to understand the whole truth and to put the pieces together helps us move forward, I believe, because it is the truth that sets us free. And that's what you're doing. You're breaking the cycle and you're bringing it all out into the open. So that cycle
absolutely
will not continue.
And I think that did help me to, as you say, understand but not condone what happened, because the cycle of abuse is exactly that.
Well, the secrecy is the most prolific enabler of these cycles to continue.
Oh, it is. It is.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that I had known some of that information when I was 16 or 18, because I could have prevented, or possibly have prevented, what happened to my youngest sister.
Those are, you know, you think about things that stay with you, and it is wondering, you know, grieving for the other victims that you know were victims of the perpetrator, but always wondering, were there more, right?
Yes.
And we carry that guilt. And I know, you know, you tell someone that hasn't walked in these shoes, I'm just going to say it, you know, talk to my priest, you know, he's not a therapist. And he comes from a good place, right? But he doesn't understand, oh, you shouldn't feel guilty, you know, don't carry that guilt, you know, absolve. Well, unless you've walked in these shoes, you don't understand, because we know what the pain is like. And we can't help but know, because we know what that pain is like, what that pain is like for any other victim. And it's, we do carry that guilt. Yes, it's not a responsibility, but it's not an easy thing to just, you know, shed from yourself, you know, that those feelings of not having protected our siblings, but they were also victims, you know, of abuse, of set abuse.
Right, exactly.
I totally understand how you feel. So you stated in your bio that after you, you know, graduated from high school, and I know that you went and you went to a 6-month, you got a degree, but you said, I was angry all the time, but I didn't really know why until I went to therapy. So as you go through, your mother passes away, unfortunately, you were young. And then as you're going through these, you know, next years and into your 20s up to 30, what was life like for you?
Well, you know, I would just fly off the handle for absolutely no reason. I mean, I was generally speaking, I had put the past behind me and I was generally pretty happy, and I was married twice. First marriage obviously sucked, but I got a beautiful daughter because of that first marriage, so I am grateful for that. Everything sucked, but it was a continuation of my abuse in a whole different way. And but I got remarried at 28 when my daughter was 5, and married to a much better person, although I had 1 foot in and 1 foot out of the relationship for 20 years until, you know, I finally started dealing with this. But, you know, I would get so mad if my husband or my daughter would put the roll of toilet paper on in the wrong direction, or if the butter was put back in the refrigerator and it was hard when I went to butter my toast in the morning, I would just explode. And I remember exploding at my brothers and sisters when I was growing up, but I never really understood why I was always exploding when they did irritating things. I can certainly look back and say, oh, okay, now I know. But it just was repressed pain, repressed anger, repressed hurt. And I, you know, my go-to was anger. And I would just yell and scream for no reason. And I'm just so grateful that I don't do that anymore.
I can understand that. But, you know, it's something very special within you to, you know, the healing process is coming back to those, you know, dissociated memories from when you were 5 and when you were 16 to 18, in the healing process and in the healing journey. It takes a lot of courage, because when you dissociate, it's, you know, it's survival, and it's a way to numb oneself from the pain. But we don't get to outrun that pain, do we? Because it does manifest itself in other ways, like being angry, exploding when the butter's put in the refrigerator and it's not soft for your toes. I can kind of relate sometimes, going, where is this coming from, you know?
That's exactly it. I was like, I just didn't even know, why am I so angry? And I just, you know, I just was.
It's like a fault line I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, I just said it had to come out somehow, and you're right. It was like a fault line. Yeah.
Or like, you know, a volcano that's emitting a little bit of steam. You know, it's going to blow one day, right? It, you know, some of us carry the burdens, you know, of our abuse till they get so heavy and we just hit a wall. And even those small little tremors, you know, eventually they don't release that. It healing is when you get to release it. But healing is also where I say it takes courage, right, is we do have to live, we have to go back and process through those emotions that we never did because we numbed ourselves to the dissociation, right? It is.
Exactly.
It
is.
There was a saying, what encouraged to heal, the only way out is through.
That is so true.
Yeah. The only way out is through. And there is light and beauty that you have to go through. So, I'm going to break to the panel, and I'm going to invite Pamela back into the conversation because we're at about 38 minutes left, and I know we've got a long ways to go.
Okay.
So, Pamela, I'd like to invite you back into the conversation. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Penelope. Y'all are having a great conversation here. I would like to know, you were raised Catholic, so how did you feel about your spirituality? How did you reconcile what he was doing to you? And then were y'all devout Catholics?
Well, my mother was a devout Catholic, and we, as all the children, would go to church with her every Sunday. I was confirmed and, went through all the stuff. But I asked my father one day, why do you not come to church with us? Because he would drop us off and then come back and pick us up. And his answer was, quite simply, when you're 18, you don't have to go either. And at 18, I chose not to go to church anymore.
Well, he was your spiritual guide, wasn't he?
He certainly was. And, I did explore other churches off and on. And for the most part, I found them wanting.
Right.
But when I was in my early 30s, I discovered what I would call more spirituality. And that really fit me so much better than Catholicism. I joke about being a recovering Catholic.
My husband can tell you all about that. Anyway, I wanted to ask you also, because being a social worker, I once had a social worker tell me, I never worked in child welfare, but she had worked in child welfare and saw a lot of child abuse. And she said she never ran across one abused child that didn't love their abuser in some way. And him being your biological dad, did you have love for him as a dad, even though he was doing this to you?
I did. It was so confusing because it was such a love-hate relationship.
Right.
And I looked up to him.
Yeah. I think a lot of people listening could relate to this. That's why it's so confusing. And I told Penelope and some other people one time, what happens when we get abused, it's like, have you ever taken the outside of a golf ball off and seen all those intertwined rubber bands, all different colors going all different ways? That's how we are inside. Our emotions are all like that. And how do you, take this one off and take that? You can't do it. It's just all enmeshed, and you just can't make sense of it. So you can't even try, especially evil. You cannot make sense of evil, And that's so true. And that's what we have to call what he did to you. It was evil, And did he show love to any of the siblings at all? Any kind of compassion?
Sorry, ask that question again. I'm not sure I heard it correctly.
Did your dad did your dad show compassion to any of you or any of your siblings? Did he have favorites?
I wouldn't say that he had favorites. You know, as kids, we were all, and I know it was the times, but we were all meant to be seen and not heard.
Okay.
I can remember all of us lined up, sitting on a sofa, being quiet while they had company or whatever it was. I just have this vision in my head of, you know, six of us or okay. five of us, really, because the last one was a surprise quite a
all
few
right.
years later.
Well, the time's getting away from us, and we have a big panel here. So what I'd like to do is let you continue to tell your story and let people, you know, ask you questions and get questions about your story.
Okay.
Answer. Okay.
Well, thank you, Pamela. And that is, you know, that's such a good question. It's still something that I think, you know, I struggle with myself, you know. It was my biological father who sexually abused me. And the question about, you know, the love you have for your father, that's a doozy. So you know, it's very hard to love, to really come to terms with that. Truly. So it's a great question.
It really is.
And, you know, my answer, I don't know about you, Claire, but my answer kind of goes day to day on that one. It's hard to. I don't know if your father, is your father still alive?
No, he passed away quite a few years ago.
Yeah. My father did too. So before I was able to bring the memory forward, well, to not the memory, just to actually speak of it. So there was, you know, we'll get to that a little bit later, but I'm going to invite Mary Ellen on because I have some more questions about that. All right, I'm going to bring Mary Ellen on. Mary Ellen, you're on with Claire.
Hi.
Hi, Mary Ellen.
I don't really have a question right now. I'm paying close attention, though, to everything you're saying, and I really appreciate, you know, the stuff you've shared. You definitely are inspiring. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mary Ellen. I'm going to bring Tamika from Oregon back on. Tamika, you're back on with Claire.
Hi, Claire. Thank you so much. I do have a question because when we talk about the healing path, we talk about some of the things that you've actually already mentioned about being seen and not heard, respecting your elders and expecting more from them, because you had mentioned how totally shocked you were that this had happened. You know, this is someone who is blood to you, who is, you know, your dad's brother, right? And so, right. And so I too was molested from the ages of 5 and 10 and by my uncle, by actually two of my uncles. And so I understand that because I too went in with, you know, being seen, not heard, respecting your elders and just doing what you were told. And so part of the healing process, I know for me, and I want to get into it for you, is that I had to separate the myth from my reality and who I was. And that's how, you know, I started breaking into my identity, who I am. And so, because I know a lot of times we'll identify what you mentioned with the experience. I'm this bad person now. What's up with me? And so I want, if you could share about how you began to separate yourself from the experience of being molested and abused. Who you really were.
You know, the truth is I didn't even discover who I really was until I was in my 50s. It took writing that story and reliving it, because even though I knew that it had happened, the face was always blank. I never knew for sure if it was my uncle or if it was a friend a friend of the family until I wrote that story down and it all came flooding back. And I think that it was at that point that I was able to say, to reclaim who I was. Because honestly, I had no clue who I was. I had been a yes girl for so long, I didn't know who I was. So
absolutely.
I guess I probably started separating at 58 when I finally wrote down that story.
It's almost as if you go through you have to go back through the wilderness. I heard someone describe a traumatic experience as the wilderness. You know, you think about the forest, the wilderness, the darkness that surrounds it. And that's what I kind of got to from hearing with you. It's like, you know, you kind of had to pick up the pieces and surrounded by all the stuff that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, great question. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Tamika. Really great question. And we have a new panel member, our NASA sister, Sharonda from North Carolina. And Sharonda, hello. I'm going to bring you on with Claire.
Hey, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
As I really appreciate Claire sharing her story. And as in time passed, when I hear stories, I can pull something about my past out. The household I grew up in, as you were saying, we were seen and not heard. That was an ongoing thing for us. That really stuck home. And just the abuse itself, because a lot of times mine took place at night, coming in the room and everything. But just hearing you, I'm so glad that you are a survivor, overcomer, and that you have the courage to come up and speak and tell us, to share with us. It takes a lot, and I'm so grateful. Just hope that your healing journey is not the beginning, but you're somewhere towards the end, and you're doing much better than you were when you were going through that traumatic series of events. So thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for being here and being a witness.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, I am.
Yeah.
But we definitely, I grew up in a household, it was 14 of us, and I'm number 11, but our dad was a military militant, seemed like, in his mind. And we were terrified. It was just normal when he was around, just to be scared to speak, talk, laugh, anything. That's how we grew up. So when you said that, be seen and not heard, that is my story. That is my stuff. I can definitely relate to that.
Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry you had to go through that as well.
Yeah. We didn't shit on anyone. But thank you for sharing.
Well, thank you, Sharonda. And that's a great comment. I mean, absolutely. And to be seen and not heard, I mean, I feel like that reinforces the dissociation as well. If you're not allowed to have a voice, and to speak to your own experiences and to validate them, you know, it's hard to become, you know, to integrate the truth and to be, like you said, you're always a yes person, right? You just, it's that in of itself, I think, just being seen and not heard and not being allowed to have a voice. I think especially if you've experienced what you've experienced, you know, in your life, Claire.
Right.
It's just a pattern. It's a pattern, but it's a pattern that is constantly reinforced. And as Sharonda mentioned, you mentioned your father. I mean, you, from 16 to 18, your father just violated you in a way that no child should ever be violated by anybody that they trust, and to live in that fear, to live in that fear of just not knowing, you know, when the next instance is going to occur. You never feel safe. And to be silent and never be speak of it is because, you know, the sexual, the physical piece of it is one thing. The emotional piece of it is another. And it's a compound.
Yes.
It's a compound, as you know, compounding effect.
It really does, yeah.
So it sounds like you had married a second time. You had a 5-year-old daughter at 28. We talked about, you know, some of the, I don't know, the fault, you know, giving off little tremors here and there with some of the, you know, anger and behavioral that you can now put into context. So we have, believe it or not, 22 minutes left. The show is flying by. And so if you could just take us, you know, maybe a little bit more quickly, chronologically through different steps from that age of, you know, 28, 30, you know, being in that marriage up to the present time, and how you made those steps toward to the healing process, what that healing process was like, was like, is like, and I know you're doing some amazing things today, but getting to the work that you're doing today.
Okay. Yeah, so I was probably in my mid-30s when I finally went to see, and she was really great, and I learned so many great tools that I can now recognize as the tools she was giving me. And I was contemplating divorce. I was waking up in the morning and wondering if I wanted to live through the day, and I would contemplate ways of committing suicide. I was a mess. I was a mess. My life was a mess. My husband was an alcoholic, a functional alcoholic, I guess is the term. And my daughter was running away from home. And in talking to a friend, she mentioned that she was seeing somebody, and that what she loved about her is that she came from the heart. And I knew upon meeting Mary Gay that she was the right person for me. We worked together for many years. And I just, you know, I learned meditation, and I learned energy work, and I learned breathing techniques and ways to calm myself when things would steam up. And she recommended that I go to another therapist, to a group that was strictly for incest survivors. And that was about, it was an 8 to 12 week group. And what I remembered most about that is that there was a 16-year-old girl in there. And I just was in such shock that someone at the age of 16 was in the group. And our leader said, well, how old were you when that happened? And it just clicked. And I went, oh, I was her age. And then there was another woman. We each had dolls that we were to bring to represent ourselves. And one of the women brought a doll without a mouth because she had no voice. And it was it was just crazy. I mean, I just realized how I didn't have a voice in that moment. And I would go home after that, after each of our meetings, and I would cry. And my husband just didn't know what to do with me. And I think what I really needed was to just be hugged, just be held. But I didn't know how to ask for that, and he didn't know how to give it to me. So that was probably the most difficult 8 to 12 weeks I ever had. But it was a huge learning curve, but it was a huge healing for me to do that. And as I was doing that, I continued to work with my transpersonal psychologist, and I actually still go to retreats with her.
How wonderful. Doesn't a good healthcare professional like that make the biggest difference?
It does. It makes a huge, huge difference. Yeah, and when we quit working together, and one of the things that I remember the most about working with her is she kept wanting me to talk about what happened when I was 5. And I was like, there's so much other stuff. I couldn't even imagine. It just seemed pointless to go back to that 15 minutes that didn't seem important. And yet, discovering that that was indeed one of the most important things for me to deal with, even though she tried and tried and tried. And I just chose not to go there.
It's interesting, Teresa, the words that you use. You chose, you weren't ready. Maybe you weren't ready.
I wasn't ready. I think I needed to wait until... Well, obviously, I needed to wait till I was ready. But I did learn. I learned so many, you know, I learned journaling. And when I started journaling, I would have to write my story in the third person. I could not write it as though it was me. I had to write it as if I were writing a story and this were happening to somebody else, because it was too painful to write my story.
I think we can, you have a lot of people shaking their heads right now that I can understand that. And you know, we've been very good at protecting ourselves all of our lives too, because we survived and we're alive. And finally feeling safe enough to let that come out.
Clea, I think, you know, I had a lot of growing up to do, a lot of knowing myself to learn, a lot of working with my little 5-year-old before I could actually go back there.
I understand. I'm just nodding my head. I can understand that. Absolutely. And you know, those, you know, a soul injury, a young 5-year-old child, we've walked in those shoes. That's a task. That's a journey, and we all go at our own pace.
Exactly.
But I know from my own experience,
that little five-year-old girl has to feel safe enough to finally, you know, come to understand and accept and acknowledge and process through what happened, right, and know that she's safe.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, she'd been popping in and out for over a year before I finally realized that this was something I really needed to look at.
It sounds to me here, like in your bio, that once that five-year-old found her voice, things just went into so So after years of therapy, I moved on to alternative therapies, movement, journaling, and expressive arts, which finally enabled me to speak openly about my abuse. Today, I create a safe space for sexual abuse survivors to share their survivor and recovery story through creativity and writing. I founded Voices Heard, an interactive, or the interactive, says e-zine that empowers sexual abuse survivors to shatter their long-held silence through storytelling and expressive arts. I share my story of abuse as a speaker and writer in order to help and heal others. So, wow, and I'm interested to hear more.
So as I wrote, excuse me a sec.
Yeah, you'll have to.
As I wrote down that story, I realized that, you know, when that weight lifted off my shoulders, I realized that this was something I had to share with others. It was a way of, it was beyond just writing Dear Diary. It was such a deep and full experience where I allowed myself to hear everything, feel everything, remember every word that was said and every single thing that had happened, and was able to see his face for the first time. Mm. And when I got done, I just knew that this was something I needed to share with other women. And as I started to do workshops for women, not necessarily for survivors, in the first workshop, I noticed there was one survivor. In the next one, there were two or three. And about the fourth one, and, you know, keep in mind these were pretty small, maybe half a dozen people at a time, because I was keeping them intimate on purpose. So the fourth one that I did, every person in there was a sexual abuse survivor. And that's when it clicked. And I knew that, okay, I have to work with sexual abuse survivors.
Wow.
And I tried working different ways. I was doing some coaching, some workshops, different things like that. And about 2 years ago, during my coffee meditation, as I jokingly call it in the morning, I had asked the question before, what's next? What do I need to do to work with survivors and not get triggered? Mm-hmm. And what came to me during my meditation was a traveling art exhibit. So I started the Empowered Voice traveling art exhibit. And I did an online creative workshop where we each created whatever art worked for us. Some was poetry, some was drawing. Everything was a little bit different. My modality was collage. And we've created some just amazing artwork came out of that. And so I had a show 2 years ago in April. It was the first show. And there weren't a lot of attendees. There were only about 20 or so. But I had a woman there who expressed her story through dance. Some expressed through song. Some through sharing their story. And then there were about a dozen pieces of art that were shared as well. So I traveled with it to I want to say San Francisco, but that wasn't it. It was on the other side of the bay. Anyway, it'll come to me.
Oakland.
So I traveled. Oakland. Thank you. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. So it was. I took it to Oakland because a friend of mine was doing a show over there, and I took it to be part of that. And then I had planned to do it at a couple of other places, and was going to do the workshops at the same time. One was in Seattle, another one was here in Colorado, and then things just didn't happen. So by December, I was kind of disillusioned and didn't know for sure what's next, and I just kind of laid low until January about mid-January, and I did the same thing, begged the question, now what? And of course, by now it was COVID. I won't be traveling with anything right now. So what's next? And I got Voices Heard, create an interactive magazine. And I went, oh, duh, why didn't I think of that in the first place? I've been a graphic designer for 25 years. And it just now occurred to me that I should use that to create this beautiful interactive magazine or e-zine. And so that's what I did. I came out with that magazine a little over a year ago, the fourth edition. It's a quarterly, and the fourth edition just came out a few weeks ago. And the next one's in July, if anyone wants to share their story.
So that's an e-zine, not e-zine. Okay, I get it now. Magazine, e-zine. All right. This, as you can tell, I am not a highly technological girl. That is
okay.
So cool. Wow. So... You are in the process of getting a editing and getting a July issue content is what I'm understanding for your e-zine.
Exactly.
Okay. So you are on Facebook, I see, under Voices Heard. We can also find you under Claire O'Leary. Once you if you could let our listeners know how to find you.
They can find me on Facebook under The Empowered Voice by Claire O'Leary, because I created it before I created Voices Heard. And you can also find me on Instagram by the same name, Empowered Voice. And the website that I use most is The Empowered Voice Traveling Art Exhibit, which is quite a mouthful, .com. And there you can find the magazine right on the homepage. You'll find the link to that on the homepage. I'm looking at building a separate website for Voices Heard, but it gets a little overwhelming to have more than one.
Yeah, that's a lot to manage for sure. So for those of you who are listening in tonight and who use the I know you called it on the number, but if you're streaming it or if you go back to the NASCA .org, www.nasca.org, our website page, on the front page there is the schedule of the shows, and they're dated. So tonight is May 17th, obviously, 2021. We are scan number 2661, and Claire O'Leary's name is hyperlinked. So if you just click on her name, it'll bring you right to her Facebook page, which is talks all about her easing, and it's called The Empowered Voice. I see you right here. Empowered Voice by Claire O'Leary. And you can see Claire's Facebook page and links to her other websites or contact information that way. So there are some ways to find you and to read your easing and keep following you.
Absolutely. They're welcome to email me, contact me in any way.
That is awesome. I love what you're doing, and I love how you got there. It's a journey too, right?
It is.
I've got about 30 seconds left, so I wanted to give them to you to leave us a few final words.
I would just say, find a way to heal as early as you can, because the earlier you heal, the sooner you can have a joyful life.
Oh, beautifully stated. Beautifully stated. I wish to thank our very special guest, Claire O'Leary from Newcastle, Colorado, for coming on this evening and sharing her story. Very, very courageous. So thank you, Claire. And on behalf of NASCA, my co-host, Pamela Lockridge, we wish to say goodnight. I want to thank our panelists, Mary Ellen from New York, Tamika from Oregon, our listen-in-only member from Pennsylvania, and Sharonda from North Carolina. Thank you for joining the panel. And to the listening audience, as you know, I always end the shows by saying this: preventing child abuse is the responsibility of us all. If you see something, say something. Thank you and good night.
Blog Talk Radio.